This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Ibrahim Sani this morning, Monday, the 18th of August, 6 o'clock right now. Good morning, gentlemen.
Guten Morgen.
Hey, good morning.
Welcome back. It's
thank God it's Monday, I suppose.
No, oh my goodness, it's Monday.
Do you know any other good morning phrases apart from Guten Morgen?
Guten Morgen. Sherrod Guten Morgen.
Oh, he's probably going to be coughing in his sleep. Since he's on sabbatical at the moment, he'll be back in a few weeks' time. But we're keeping you company this morning over the next 4 hours. You'll hear from the likes of Hugh Young, Managing Director of Aberdeen Asset Management. Mr. Hugh Young will be on the show to talk about how Aberdeen, managing some $400 billion worth of funds, currently how they're navigating the increasingly volatile investment environment.
Yeah, Aberdeen, the Scottish fund manager. But, you know,
did
of course
you say, are you going to do the interview in that accent?
No, yeah. I'm going to try. Look, I mean, there's lots of news about them, being hit by redemptions on their funds, given the poor market sentiment. You know, Brexit issues, you know, quite publicly, they lost about 23, 24 billion pounds. Actually, their AUMs are 400 billion pounds. And at one point in time, about a year and a bit ago, they were something to the order of 425 billion pounds. And they publicly, very publicly lost a lot of their money. I'm going to be talking about that. They've also been, you know, struck off some fund managers, some client lists, you know, for having lost money. Yeah. Going to see whether the usually cherubic and, and humorous Hugh Young will respond.
You know, with an AUM of 400 billion pounds, to put it in perspective, if you use a 5 ringgit to a pound, that's about 2 trillion ringgit.
Yeah.
That's large.
That's a lot. Yeah. A lot of money.
It's like Khazana and PNB, you know, combined plus everybody else in between. It's
correct.
Huge.
Yeah, it's not a nose picking, shall we say?
Oh God!
Yes. Sorry. Good morning.
Where to start the Monday, Chuang?
Quite visual, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, look, he started this business in 1985. Him and his partners. You know, they've done quite well. Their approach are bottom-up stock picking, so they don't come from a macro perspective. They choose certain companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had to stick to their guns because they bought stuff like Rio Tinto, they bought stuff like... I think they're going to ask him about Swiber in Singapore, you know, Swiber.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, they're exposed to Swiber, is it?
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, but they have huge exposures to emerging markets, which is kind of like the wrong call. Because a lot of the money that's been made in the last 2 or 3 years has been North
America.
Hang
on. They made a big bet on emerging markets, let's say 3 or 4 years ago, and it was a profitable business for them.
Yeah. Well, it depends. You see, because if you're ultra long, like Julian is, then, you know, you might still be proven right. But then, sorry, that's another visual.
But I understand what
you're
saying.
Yeah. You know, in terms of approach.
So Mr. Hugh Young, is he based in the UK?
He's based in Singapore.
He's based out of Singapore. Yeah. No wonder that's where the emerging market buys is coming from, simply by location.
Maybe.
All right, let's find out more with Hugh Young, Managing Director of Aberdeen Asset Management on The Breakfast Grill. He'll be speaking to Kusu Chuang. 8:05, that is. After the grill, we have current affairs. Now, if you guys remember last week, we spoke to PT Foundation Chairperson Hisham Hussein to discuss the latest trends in the new cases of HIV/AIDS infections in the country. There was news that there was a worrying increase in sexual transmissions as opposed to intravenous drug usage transmissions. So this is part two of the series of our look into HIV/AIDS. Today on Current Affairs, we're going to continue that discussion on the real facts of the disease, the existing attitudes on the problem, and also the barriers to increasing public awareness beyond these statistics.
Very quickly, I don't think, in 2016, we have that very big stigma that AIDS is a death sentence. It's no longer a death sentence. People can still be managed quite well with proper drugs, and you can still lead a very fruitful life.
Ibrahim and I were talking about this last week, how when we were in school, we were of that generation where they had, you know, a lot of the AIDS awareness campaigns had to do with say no to drugs and drugs will bring you AIDS. But now it's a lot more to do with sexual transmission. And I think in this day and age, the authorities have a hard time trying to communicate that change in HIV/AIDS awareness.
Well, maybe that's part of the reason why, and probably a multitude of factors behind why, but probably one of the main reasons behind why cases are spiking.
Yeah. All right. So I had a chat with my wife, who's a doctor, since this is part two. So after part one, I had a nice chat with her. I was asking her, what are the AIDS statistics in the country? And she said, quite simply, sexually transmitted diseases from AIDS is more than half. Mm. So you're right. There was a shift of how you contract AIDS.
So what's the comparative?
So how Malaysians contracted AIDS in, let's say, 20 years ago was very different.
Was through intervenous drug injections. Correct. Now it's more.
How many cases do we have, though? I mean, is it small percentage of the population, or is it?
No.
It's just a trend that it's growing. So now it seems.
So
to
we
be
don't have that
shift.
Many cases like
this. No.
We don't. It's still a problem, but I think that the fact that it's now switching, the percentage is growing higher on sexual transmissions. That is worrying because. The target capture market for AIDS awareness campaigns is usually in school, right? That's where you kind of teach the children, lay the foundation. And it's really difficult to do that if you're talking about sexual transmitted diseases and HIV AIDS included.
It's worth noting that intravenous drug users or IVDUs, they are on a declining trend in the country. But it doesn't mean that they're going away. It's declining very substantially in the cities, but it has shifted to the rural areas, including the Malay heartlands of, you know, Terengganu and Kedah and Kelantan. So, you know, changing demography, changing needs.
Yeah, that's quite disconcerting because, you know, drug use is very much linked to, you know, economic circumstances, emotional circumstances. And, you know, it's a sign of the economy going where it is. But again, I mean, that's a story for another day. But the thing is, with sexually transmitted or basically HIV, it could also be a sign of promiscuity. And that is basically sex education.
Yep. And it's hard to do that in schools at the moment.
Really.
With all the controversy that we've been talking about, you know.
Well,
I mean,
you can, because you can teach it in school, right? Because a friend of mine, her children are in Australia now. And in Australia, it starts at 11 years old. I'm serious. It starts at 11 years old. And they're told to go to the clinic and buy prophylactics and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean,
and this is a, you know, for example, he's a Chinese kid from Penang, used to be from Penang. And he's like, you know, in Hokkien, of course, she told me to go to the clinic to buy these things. And what in heaven's name is it, right?
Yeah.
So, but in Australia, it's very prevalent.
No, you're right. I did go to school in Australia and I was
It
taught,
was, right? 11 years
was.
Old.
I was 11 years old when I was taught. And they had this, the thing is, people are still going to do it whether or not you're going to teach them, right?
We've had like entire talkback conversations on this topic, and you'll hear such a range of views coming from parents themselves, some who are for it and some who are against it and some who think it's no business of the state or the schools to be teaching their kids something that should be happening at home, you know, between parent and child. So all these things, I guess, you know, it's a huge conversation to have. But on the periphery of this is HIV and AIDS awareness.
Yeah.
And I guess that's part of the sex education campaign as well.
So back to my conversation with my wife, she said, why are we so gung-ho on talking about AIDS when in the scheme of STDs, AIDS form just, you know, below 5%. It's actually the other 95% of the STDs that we need to be worried about.
Yeah.
Including herpes, syphilis, gonorrhea, the whole set, right? And the awareness of these 95% of the STDs, it's not normally talked about. And that's the disconcerting effort that the public has to think about.
Okay, so more on the current status of HIV AIDS infections in Malaysia at 8:35 a.m. That's the topic of discussion for Current Affairs today. At 9:30, we are Pressing Matters with Joyce Goh from the Edge Media Group. And we're going to be talking about some of the scoops she's written about in the Edge Weekly, including rumours that China's second largest banking group, China Construction Bank, has applied for a banking license here. So find out more on Pressing Matters at 9:35 a.m. A quick look at the news that you need to know going into the week. Now, the Pokemania craze has hit Malaysia.
Oh,
the wait is over for Pokemon fans in Malaysia. The global virtual monster hunting craze has finally reached our shores this weekend. I don't know about you, but everywhere I went, people were playing this game. I mean, I was out in shopping malls. I was out with friends who were playing this game as we were trying to cross the street.
It's
and
absurd.
I was like, oh my goodness, you guys,
mad.
Pay attention.
I think if you keep them in like a sandbox or like a little cordoned off area, it'd be fine. But they're running around in public and, you know, there are cars and there's people and there's trains and there's
exactly.
bikes.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
But it's very immersive.
I don't want one to run into me, basically, a Pokemon player.
I saw on
or
Facebook.
Or to drive into me.
A colleague of ours says that BFM's building is a Poke Gym. And I don't know for the life of me what that means.
It's where you train the Pokemon when you catch it. Oh my, how do I know this? This is what happens. Yeah. Over 1 weekend, I've become a Pokemon.
Have you played it?
Did you guys download the game?
No. I'm not a fan. But just being around people who are constantly talking about this. Now, it's really gone crazy because we're talking about in Kuantan, a man was fined 300 ringgit for playing Pokemon Go while driving. I went to a mall over the weekend and all over the place, people were playing with their phones. And because it sucks up energy, right? You could see them with the power banks.
Oh. How absurd. I mean, if you're going to exercise, you could play a proper sport, man.
But there's also this news that I came across yesterday that a man actually discovered a body. And as I was telling this story to Melissa, you were telling me that it's not common, actually.
Yeah, well, there was... When
discovered a body where?
In Singapore, apparently a body was dumped somewhere and this guy
was... So Pokemon helped him find that body.
Well, okay, so what it is actually is, you know, you've got your app and you're outside trying to catch these virtual monsters, right? So you're going to places where you don't normally go.
So he stumbled upon it ditch somewhere or something.
Exactly. Yes, I think it was a big drain or a river.
That's true.
In the States, the same thing had happened. Someone was trying to catch a Pokemon monster and had stumbled across a
Tell
dead
you what,
body.
Give the cops the Pokemon Go. Let them play it. Let them go and discover some carcasses.
I really don't know whether I want that. Okay, the other thing is, on the flip side, there are people who say the Pokemon Go game is actually actually good because it gets kids outside.
That statement, one of them belongs to Lim Guan Eng of Penang. And
really?
I was like, Guan Eng, are you serious?
Did he say that?
He did. He was at, I think he was at the Esplanade or something.
Well, you know, The Guardian said that too. So The Guardian, its tech pages wrote an op-ed to say that Pokemon Go actually takes us outside back to the real world.
Kind of like in a warped way. True, because otherwise you wouldn't be out in the outdoors.
It's strange though. So you're outside, but you're kind of fixated on your screen.
It seems that everybody's chiming in and giving their opinions. In fact, in Malaysia, the Mufti of Federal Territories have actually issued a statement saying that Pokemon Go is not suitable for Muslims.
And I saw your tweet in reply.
I did, quite
astute.
Yeah, I was just asking my friends whether or not we should ask him about other stuff that he needs to give opinion on. So I guess that could be it. I'm not trying to make this political. I'm just saying that a lot of people are saying a lot of things about Pokemon Go.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he's not the only Mufti to have weighed in. I think Penang Mufti as well has weighed in. But, you know, if you are going through this Pokemon Go craze, we have some wise words for you from our very own tech maestro, Jeff Sandu, who hosts the Tech Talk Show on BFM. Here's some of his advice for you when you're playing Pokemon Go.
Hey bros, Jeff Sandu here, and Pokemon Go is viral at the moment. So here are a few very important tips on how you can truly enjoy this crazy phenomenon sweeping the world. Number one, do not download and install Pokemon Go from unofficial stores. There are thousands of carbon copies being shared around that are actually infected with malwares, and these malwares are dangerous for your phone. Think of it like a bad virus in your body. Number two, don't walk into streets while looking at your mobile device. Be aware of your surroundings. Traffic is dangerous and fixed objects hurt when you walk into them. Besides, you don't have to exactly be in front of the Pokemon to catch it. Be alert at all times. Number three, do not play while driving. Stop it, guys. Seriously, not cool. Number four, stay off private properties or restricted areas like police stations or fire stations. Just keep it simple, guys. Go to the parks, walk around your neighborhood, travel to places you're familiar with, and search for them Pokemons. Number five, for all parents out there, keep an eye out on your kid and make sure they know the limit on how far they're allowed to go. Better still, take them out for a drive so they can catch these Pokemons while you learn about the game from them. It's a win-win situation. Number 6, the game relies heavily on the social aspect. So find friends who play Pokemon Go, travel in pairs or groups, use public transports like the LRT, and explore the beautiful city of Kuala Lumpur with your friends. Captured a unique Pokemon? Screenshot it and tweet it to me at BFM Radio. Number 7, carry an extra battery pack or a power bank when you're out hunting. Trust me, you will need this. Remember bro, stay safe, be alert of your surroundings at all times, and happy hunting. For more pieces on technology news, check out Tech Talk weekdays at noon or download the podcast at bfm.my.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. 6:20 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Ibrahim Sani. So what about you guys? Did you spend the weekend watching Olympics, sitting in front of the TV
all day? I did, particularly the volleyball and swimming events.
Male or female?
Actually, all both. Actually,
because I must ask.
Cheeky monkey.
This is Brazil. This is real. You've got to be watching female volleyball. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, actually, that's okay. So admission here, I was actually watching the Russian female volleyball team.
Well, that's all right. That's good too.
Beat Argentina female volleyball team.
That's good as well.
Yeah, actually, it was a fantastic. Anyway.
Did you watch the opening ceremony at least? 7 o'clock in the morning?
I never watch opening ceremonies.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well, A, because I'm sleeping. B, because there's no sport.
But the fireworks and the you know, all the glamour.
I want fireworks. I grew up in for Chinese New Year. I got fireworks, man. I want sport.
So, on Saturday morning, we all woke up late, everybody in the house. And then when we switched
on. Watched it, Ibrahim?
Yeah, it was on RTM2 or RTM1. I'm not too sure. And we watched it, and it was already much past the countries, right? And we caught Lee Chong Wei with his, you know, very handsome Baju Melayu and Songko, and he was waving the flag.
You got Brazilian, you know, female volleyball players. You're looking at Lee Chong Wei. What's wrong with you, my grandson?
I think patriotism plays a part there.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather watch Gisele Bündchen over Chong Wei anytime.
She did. She emerged.
She didn't just come out. She emerged. And then she slunk across the heart, you know.
And apparently that will be her last catwalk in her modeling career, apparently.
It was a very long runway, I have to admit.
There's no downside there.
So clearly you guys enjoyed the opening ceremony, despite reports that the budget for this ceremony had been gutted. You know, it was still quite spectacular. I think people were really quite amazed with the cauldron and the lighting of the cauldron.
Yeah.
But also the recent news is last night, breaking news is that the Russian Olympics have been banned from competing at the Rio 2016 Paralympics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Following the doping scandal that's engulfed the country.
The normal athletes for the normal Olympics haven't been banned, but the ones for the Paralympics have, right?
Yes.
Well, some of the summer Olympics.
It was
which is what is happening now.
Yeah, it's happening now. I think 2 months ago there was talk that it's going to be a blanket ban on all Russian athletes, and then it went back and forth.
But there was not. There's no blanket ban
on the Summer Olympics, but they chose to go for a blanket ban for the Paralympics. Speaking of which, right, I think because I have the medal tally right now, Russia is actually 7th and they've only got 1 gold so far. Other countries have trumped them, including South Korea, China, Italy, all of them got 2 gold medals.
That must be because of the Zika virus suits, you see.
That was South Korea with the Zika proof suit.
It's worth noting that they won the event without that suit. Okay, I mean, I'm just
jumping here.
So, you know, there was a really interesting article on the Washington Post over the weekend, and it was an op-ed talking about the Olympics, saying that if you want to end the Olympic war on performance enhancing drugs, the way to do it is to legalize that.
Yeah, look, there's kind of like water in that argument, because even though you don't want everybody to be doping just to get an edge, you know, yeah, things like the prohibition, which kind of like in the words of the smart people at the time said, you know, you've made something illegal, something which wasn't illegal to start with.
I think the smart person you're referring to is Abraham Lincoln.
That's what
Abe Lincoln talking about how prohibition makes a crime out of things that are not crimes.
Correct.
Can you... that's a good way to paraphrase
slouch,
Abe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, are they two of the same things? I mean, prohibition and doping. Are you talking about making doping not a crime just to... and then, you know, you have... I guess... Sorry. What I'm trying to say is that lots of people have poked holes in the arguments of, you know, doping, saying that, you know, it's a sham now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's doing it. It's an open secret. So why not just... legalize it and set guidelines and benchmarks.
I think I agree with this op-ed because this goes on to, you know, box down the three or four important sports that is just riddled with dope, right? The track and field, the weightlifting event, as well as cycling. If this op-ed was taken into consideration, i.e. you allow for performance enhancement drugs just for these three sports, I don't see a reason why this would be bad for the Olympics.
But you watch the Olympics for the, you know, the spirit of sport, you know, mankind pushing themselves to the physical limits of their bodies.
Yeah, the faster, higher, stronger.
Yeah, but if you legalize doping or performance enhancing drugs, then what are you essentially watching?
Well, there are parallels with the prohibition and there's parallels with the whole marijuana legalization argument. And what the op-ed says is it's just worth a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And what that discussion with the marijuana paradigm has resulted in is, for example, in the US, there are several states in the US which have legalized cannabis for certain types of applications. For example, if you're a cancer patient. I think it's worth considering because when you have it under controlled circumstances, and I want to cite, for example, in Amsterdam in Holland, where, you know, where drug use is allowed or cannabis use is allowed in certain parts of the city, then the crime level goes down. Then the, you know, the whole black market element goes down. The government gets to, you know, monetize part of the use, and conditions become controlled.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the same thing.
Right. Essentially, you want a controlled condition.
Yeah.
And where I'm arguing is that rich countries in the Olympics, including China and the US, they already give these very unique drugs, which are legalized, by the way, to their athletes, which athletes from poorer countries, you know, for instance, you know, the African countries and also the Middle Eastern countries where they don't spend so much in sports programs, you don't have access to that. So already you see the difference between athletes that have access to these medications, which are legal, versus athletes who don't have access to
this. Well, on that evidence, I'd love to see us Malaysians who are shorter, slower, and, you know, slightly more rotund, compete with the Brazilians in football, and he's zipping circles around there. Because
as I was watching the volleyball, the volleyball game, right? Height plays an important role. I mean, I'm not kidding.
So I would love to see our Malaysians jumping, you know,
you can,
jumping Ronaldo-esque into the sky.
The net is very high. You know, all the Russians can put their chin on the top of the net, basically, because they're that tall. But the Argentinians, they're pretty short. Let's just face it. I'm just going to call
them
Don't
talk about Argentinians. I'll talk about Malaysians.
They can play that game. Messi is extremely short. Shorter than me, actually.
Messi is superhuman, so he's out of the
top. What I'm trying to say is height doesn't play an important role, right? As long as you can put yourself out there and push yourself even faster, stronger.
Our sprinter, his best time, he just beat Robon, what's his name? You know, Watson Nyambek's record, 10.26 or whatever.
Yeah.
Usain Bolt, I'd love to see him running, you know, as fast as you said,
next to Usain
Bolt. And maybe even beating Usain Bolt, you know.
Hopefully.
But would it detract from your enjoyment of watching
the sport?
If you knew that everyone was on some kind of performance enhancing drugs, and then you'd be like, oh, what exactly am I watching? Just the competition?
But you see, if you take an extreme circumstances, like for example in the UFC with MMA, and some, you know, drug testing hasn't really permeated UFC yet.
No. Even WWF or E.
Correct.
Or whatever, yeah.
And you see these people, they're super, you know, they're not even people anymore. They're like, you know, they're 0.1% body fat. They're going at it hammer and tongs, and they're like, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you take it like a spectator sport, purely spectatorial. Okay.
So it's worth noting that in Malaysia, the star had it quite nicely. We should be looking at A, B, C, D. A for archery, B for badminton, C for cycling, and D for diving. That C for cycling, right, Azizul Hasni, he was, you know, milliseconds away from getting the gold or even a bronze in the previous London Olympics when he went against Sir Chris Hoy now. In cycling, you know everyone is on dope. So to answer your question, Melissa, what are we watching, right? Really, nothing different. I'm just going to watch.
There's a high level of hypocrisy now. Because
That's why the op-ed on the Washington Post is saying, because of all this hypocrisy, let's just come out and talk about it.
Yeah.
What can we tolerate and what can't we tolerate? I have to say, I think everyone watches the Olympics for very different things. I watch it for, I don't know, maybe I'm a sad sock.
I watch it for the Brazilian volleyball.
I'm sure you do. I watch it for the heartbreak. Did you guys watch the the gymnast who broke his leg.
Yeah, yeah, it's on my
really. What
it's,
happened?
It's actually, it's actually my I made it my phone wallpaper.
You are a sad.
I am.
You are a morbid person.
But you're an emotional guy,
like. The put it this way, like the leg went up to his ear.
Oh
let's,
my god,
let's
it
just
was so
like
bad.
That.
What happened?
He
broke his leg. It's by far the worst injury that the Olympics has seen so far. I mean, it's been what 3 days now since. But it was really kind of heartbreaking. You imagine someone practicing and training their whole life, their whole young lives for this moment, and only to end it with a terrible, terrible injury at the Olympics, in the eyes of everyone as well.
Ayo,
I know.
This is bad,
man. Did you just Google it?
Yeah,
French.
So it's a French gymnast. I just Googled it. I'm showing to Chuang now.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's
pretty
bad.
Scary.
It's bad. Okay. Yeah. All right. So 6:30 now. We've got the first news bulletin of the day coming up next with Nadia Aziz, BFM 89.9. Coming on to 6:40 right now. Now, there's been quite a bit of controversy following the decision of the National Film Development Corporation Malaysia, FINAS, and the Malaysia Film Producers Association, PFM. Their decision to segregate films into Bahasa Malaysia and non-Bahasa Malaysia categories at this year's Malaysian Film Festival. So, by doing so, I think there's been quite a fair bit of backlash. We've got Afflin Chowkee, the actor, coming out to say that he's going to be boycotting the event because he views what they've decided to do as racist. Also, local cinematographer Mohamed Nur Kasim has also withdrawn his participation in the event. He has also said he's going to return whatever awards he's won previously.
Yeah, he's won two of them as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was quite a vocal critic. And, reading news like this, you already have to wonder to yourself, look, I mean, the Malaysian film market is so small. Why would you want to make it even smaller? And why would you raise the ire of potential corporate sponsors like AirAsia and CIMB?
Right.
By, you know, the country is moving towards a one Malaysia unified platform. And why would you want to follow the opposite route?
Well, if we look at the box office takings last year, and FINAS is very good about publishing its figures. If you go to the website, you know, it has every movie that they've ever released and how much the takings were. It's really quite transparent in the numbers. But you can see the trend. Since 2011 to 2015, it's been on a steady decline. That means people are just not going to watch Malaysian movies that frequently anymore.
It's also that Pareto principle where the three or four movies actually carried the entire industry forward. Only three to four movies last year made a lot of money, and that contributes to about more than 80% of total takings last year.
Well, no, that was out of about 80 movies. So I think there were about 80 movies that were released last year, 80 local films, but yet three or four made money. I mean, how is that possible?
And one movie, Ola Bola, was actually part of this, affected by this decision, because I don't think Ola Bola was classified as a Bahasa Melayu movie.
No, it was as... So I believe Jagat and Ola Bola have been put under the non-Bahasa Malaysia category. And if you've watched those movies, you would know that they were freaking good. They were really good movies. And they're the shoo-in to win this year, right?
Yeah, so I've seen Ola Bola, and it's all about unity and about, you know, warm and fuzzy feelings between all Muhibah races. Blah, blah, blah. I haven't seen Munafik or Boba Boy. Apparently, those are the two movies also pushed up the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's quite heartening because it shows that Malaysians in general, you know, exemplified by people like Afflin Chowkee and Mohamed Nur Kasim, are pro-unity.
Yeah.
And quite rightly so, because you have to fight this war, or you have to, you know, we have to be one as one, because Malaysia ain't very big in the first place.
Okay, so we've got the FINAS Director General on the Breakfast Grill, and when I interviewed him, Mohamed Kamil, he seems to be very progressive. He seems very centric towards entertainment. He wants to make money, very savvy in that sense. So when this thing came out, it actually threw in a lot of confusion on my end as I was reading this, because how can a person that I've interviewed myself seems so progressive, and yet now we have the FFM. Sorry, FFM?
Yeah.
Not the flour mills.
PFM, yes.
Pardon my...
Not BFM, PFM.
PFM, right? To have this kind of,
it's an oft-quoted refrain because me included, I've spoken to many politicians, especially from the ruling coalition, and they seem to be quite level-headed people with their heads screwed on properly. And then they come out in public and they go on and make these incendiary remarks. And you got to wonder to yourself, for political reasons, people, I think, pander to the rednecks.
Yeah, so I have to wonder then, I mean, how many people would be upset if a non-Bahasa Melayu, non-Bahasa Malaysia movie or film won Best Picture?
Probably quite a lot.
Quite a lot. And probably the reason why there's been segregation in this case, right?
Of the three movies, right, Munafik, Ola Bola and Baba Boy, I watched all three in the cinema with my kids, right?
Were they all warm and fuzzy feelings and all that thing?
For Ola Bola, yes. For Baba Boy, it was damn hilarious. It was just freakingly good. It was long, over 2 hours. And can you imagine, I have three kids of varying ages, right? 2, 4, and 9. And they were stayed, glued into
on the
cinema.
So the two-year-old as well?
Yeah, because it was funny and it was good and it was filled with jokes. And to a point where I'm starting to question, oh my God, am I watching a Hollywood movie or not?
So viewers, audiences vote with your pockets, right? Clearly vote with your wallets
absolutely.
Here. And the fact that there's been a steady decline in the Malaysian film industry takings, the Malaysian box office takings, that really speaks to something. Because I have to say, how the availability and accessibility of Hollywood films has taken
audiences by storm.
How many kids now would opt for Baba Boy or any other locally produced cart animation over Finding Nemo, Finding Dory, Frozen?
Yeah, you've really got your work cut out for you. You're making life harder for yourself. And I'm quite heartened to know that narrow, divisive and bigoted doesn't make money and people are walking away with their wallets. And it's a very relevant read across to the media industry because, newspapers like, dare I say it, like the one you have in front of you, Ibrahim, or the NST, their circulations have dropped by a million times because people just don't want to see, narrow, divisive, bigoted statements on their front pages. Yeah. They're just walking away from it.
Well, I'm glad that Afleen Shawki has weighed in, but also, corporate figures like Nazir Razak, like Tony Fernandez have also weighed in saying that they don't agree with this. But they've received backlash for that. So they've come out to say, this is a really bad decision, blah, blah, blah. Then the detractors came out to say, Nazir, it's not like you did much for the local film industry.
Because it was bigoted to start with, maybe.
So my question is, do these corporate leaders have a leg to stand on when when weighing in on social issues?
I think these individuals call the spade a spade. If something is amiss, they will just say, you don't need, legs to actually announce something. It's not much of an analysis statement. It is a view that they have and they want to share it. Much like us every morning, we have a view.
I like that corporate leaders weigh in. I don't think enough corporate leaders weigh in on social issues.
Because their money makes the world go round.
Yes.
And, AirAsia has put money into something as in Congress in Malaysia as basketball. I mean, nobody plays basketball in Malaysia, right? And CIMB has sponsored Nicole David from, a million years ago.
Mm.
So they've got money to back up their statements. And they're telling Finas, look, if you're going to, if you turn your ship around, we'll put money into your ship. But if you don't turn it around, then sorry, goodbye. Sayonara, baby.
What makes you want to watch a Malaysian-made film?
Genuinity. Whether or not that movie has that genuine trust of trying to convey a message to us. I think a lot of Malaysian movies are not genuine. There's a lot of fakeness, even the language that they use. When you say Bahasa Melayu, right? I mean, I speak Bahasa Melayu all the time. The only time I speak English is when I'm on air. So I don't speak the way I see them speak on the TV, on the in the movies.
But there are guidelines for that, right? Remember when Pochukang was on BFM, he spoke perfect English, but and when he told Ezra Zaid, who interviewed him, that on the script, the English is perfect grammar, perfect syntax.
Right. So are these guidelines going to be there forever? Because it clearly is not doing too well for the box office takings. It is, over the past 5 years, the guidelines are not making people come to the movies.
Well, the message is very clear. You stay this way, you're going to go bankrupt. Sorry. That's the way the market works.
Yeah, and because of that, right, that's why that genuinity comes in. Because Baba Boy and Ola Bola, they speak to each other among the cast in that movie as the way others speak, right? I don't know whether they're flaunting the guidelines.
Look, I mean, we talked about how the demise of Hokkien last week and all that.
Oh, yes.
Well, language evolves, language ebbs and flows like they're tired, and it changes all the time. And Malaysians speak to each other in Manglish, like how the Singaporeans speak to each other in Singlish. And, you know, in 50 years' time, that would be a completely new language by itself, just as how Latin has disappeared. So, look, I mean, you can't hang on to the coattails of, you know, your luggage, which is dragging you down. You're going to go bankrupt. Sorry. Yeah. That's just the way it works.
I'm curious to know whether more people will join this boycott or whether it will even work. Because, you know, we've seen... Do you remember the Oscars and the hashtag OscarsSoWhite? And then you saw a lot of the black actors boycott. Did that really change anything for the way, you know... African-American nominated actors and actresses were, right? Did it change much?
There's a slight distinction because the Oscars and the American movie industry is so good. We kind of like in the rest of the world forgive, you know, even though it is distinctly racist. And we made a very good point this year about, you know, Uma and Ezra, about how the Oscars is a very white male American affair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what Melissa's trying to get at is
would a boycott work? Right? So and Aflin Shawki.
I think it will. It will work. Even if no one joins Aflin Shawki, I think it's good enough for us to actually talk about this.
Yeah.
Because that's the message I want to come across.
Actually, that's a good point, because if Aflin didn't do this, if you know, if Nazir Qasim, and yeah, Mohammed Noor Qasim,
I mean, he's
didn't
a celebrated cinematographer. He's won two times. He's going to return his award.
He's fantastic. I bought his book. It's amazing.
I don't know the guy, but I think, you know, fantastic. You know, for someone to take such a vocal stand, it's amazing.
But you know, I think it's good enough that we're talking about it as well, and that's, you know, sparking some conversation. If not, it would have completely flown under the radar, right? Yeah. Narin Ramakrishna has tweeted in asking, have you folks watched Jagat? Narin, I have to say, I really wanted to watch this movie, but I missed it when it was screening. Apparently, it didn't have a very long screen time, so I'm trying to figure out how I can watch it. Again, trying to figure out whether I can talk to the producers of this and have a private screening. Well, I'm sure you've watched it, Narin. Tell us what you thought about Jagat. I've heard very good reviews about that. 6:50 right now, we've got news coming up at the top of the hour.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.